Welcome to The Equality Lens, the podcast dedicated to educating you on equality, diversity, and inclusion. Together, we can make a difference in our society. Join host Amrez Khan along with special guests as they share their experiences, discuss their perspectives, and thoughts. Please note, comments shared are the thoughts of Amrez and his guests, and not that of any organizations they are employed by or associated with. Now, let's get into today's episode.
Welcome back, listeners. How are you? How are you doing? If you'd like to get in touch and let me know what you're thinking of the podcast episodes, feel free to do so at YourEDIDude on Twitter. Today, I have the privilege of being joined by an inspiring woman. She's the Chief Executive of Bolton NHS Foundation Trust, an organisation I formerly worked for. And I'm so excited to have her on board to have a good old catch up, a chinwag, and talk all things equality, diversity and inclusion. It's the fabulous Fiona Nodden.
Well, how do I follow that, Amrez? That was just such a lovely welcome. Hello.
But do you know what, Fiona? You are fabulous. You actually are.
Oh, that's... Don't, you're embarrassing me now.
Oh, well, it's a compliment. Can I just say, when I used to work for Bolton, I used to see her, I'd be like, Fiona's outfits are on fire, everybody. She just dresses so well.
Well, I actually... So, thank you. Hmm. That's lovely. And I use fashion as a way of projecting my personality as well, so I love colour, I love fashion, and I just think it's you know, there's no point keeping things for best. Why can't you just wear things that you like every day? And there's a fantastic individual on Instagram, another really inspiring woman who I've never actually contacted yet, but I do follow regularly on Instagram, called Helena Morrissey. And she outfits of the day and things. And she just seems like a phenomenal individual, really inspiring, and just does all sorts of things, but posts regularly about what she's wearing and how she uses it. And it's not a uniform, but it's just a way of, you know, looking down. So if I wear a sequin skirt, when I look down and I see the sequins, it makes me happy. So it makes me do a better job as well, because it makes me happy.
Yeah, I love that. And you've got to be happy and feel good about yourself when you're doing such challenging, extraordinary work in the NHS at the moment. So it's important. And my favourite, do you know my favourite Fiona outfit? We should have like a magazine article with your favourite outfits or something.
What is it?
There's a few, actually. I loved your outfit that you were... I think Lisa Gammack caught a picture of you on the bicycle, and you were wearing this fantastic outfit. And another time when I was at induction and you came along, and I think you were wearing a suit. Was it a blue-coloured suit? If I'm trying to remember off the top of my head.
I love wearing a shirt and tie. I've got a three-piece suit and I wear with a shirt and tie, and I just... You know, it makes me feel really powerful. So if anybody sees me in that kind of outfit, then, you know, it means I mean business and I'm ready for action.
Oh, yes. We like Fiona. Very, very good. I think it's very good. And so obviously you work at Bolton at the moment. Before that, you were at the Christie, weren't you?
I was. So, so I started life as a... So I'm from Bolton. I'm very, very proud of being a Boltonian. I grew up in Tomfold, which was not the most wealthy area of Bolton, but I came from a really well-loved, well-nurtured family, and went to school in Braitmith, which again is quite a deprived area of Bolton, but had a really great schooling, and then went in to do, decided I'm extremely clumsy and had quite a lot of interactions with hospital care as I kept falling over and breaking different bones in my body, and I was fascinated by healthcare. I know, no, I really am very, very clumsy. My mum took me to what I class as a clumsy doctor when I was about 10. So I think I have got some form of classification, but I am scabby knee is throughout my life, really.
So am I. I trip over my left foot, Fiona.
I fall off my shoes regularly. And but people say it's because you're wearing high heels. No, I fall more in flat shoes and trainers, and I literally just fall over. So extremely clumsy, and was exposed to healthcare from quite a young age.
Oh, bless you. And did that sort of give you a love for the NHS? Is that where sort of the passion was born?
I started off by wanting to do dentistry and then realised that maybe not teeth. But so I went into radiography. One, because I've been x-rayed a number of times and was fascinated by it. And I did really well in physics. And thought, you know what, my love of physics and biology and anatomy kind of led me into radiography. So I started at the old Salford Royal, which is on Chapel Street, which is now flats, and the radiology department's was in the basement there. So I started my life in Salford and then did the whole of the Salford rotation, which was the old health authority. And so I had a great radiology student days and was exposed to lots of different equipment and different patients, and from neonates through to care of the elderly. So I had a whole host of different patient interactions, which were just wonderful. Then I got a job at the old it's now Salford Royal, which is the old Hope Hospital, and spent a very, very happy career there. I was there for a long time as a radiographer. Had quite a bit of turbulent career there. So I became the trade union representative.
Ooh.
I was a trade, yeah. So I didn't, oh, you didn't know this.
I know. Yeah. It's interesting now. I'm learning more. Okay.
So I became the trade union representative because people describe me a bit of a sponge, really. So I see something and acquire it and use it for the good. So I saw lots of really bad behaviours, really terrible staff engagement, and people just being shouted at and told what to do. So I was elected to be the trade union rep. I spent 8 years as a trade union rep, but during that time was worked locally, became the regional chair, and also worked at a national level, was elected onto the National Society of Radiographers and College of Radiographers Council. So that gave me a real understanding of corporate mentality and unitary requirements. And because I was an elected member, I didn't actually have a vote, which everybody thought, well, she can't vote. Well, no, I didn't need to vote, because actually it was the interactions in the meetings and outside the meetings where you made sure that your influence was understood and could really change the dynamics of any conversation rather than having a vote. And I think sometimes in a board of directors, as we have many, and I work on one, that we think voting is the answer. Actually, voting is the end point, because once you've voted, you can't go back. But actually, the conversations, the dynamics, the influence of the conversation is everything. So that I learned so much as a trade union rep. In fact, they were probably the best education I had to go into a management position, because I understood staff. And that's why my real desire is, I've got two real purposes in my job. One is around patient care and improving patient care, and the other one is about staff engagement and making sure that the staff are supported to do the very, very best jobs that they can do. And those are the only two things I think that are personally are really important to the chief executive. And that's kind of where my early days was formed, around that trade union side. So yeah, I'm quite a socialist, really. I can't cross a picket line. I was once in New York.
Yeah.
Long time ago. And we wanted to go to, there's an oyster bar in Grand Central Station, and there was a picket line outside it, and they said, well, you can go in, but they're not paying us enough. So I couldn't cross a picket line, so I missed out on oysters in Grand Central Station, which sounds really grand, but it isn't. But I did miss out there.
Do you know what? One of the things I love a lot about you and your leadership is it's just so easy to talk to you. I feel like when I was in Perth as well, obviously, it was just so nice to have a conversation with a chief exec. And I love that you came, I believe you still go to induction, and that's such a really powerful message for people. It's just so wonderful being on the receiving end of you, Fiona. So
thank you.
Sharing
you. Lovely.
No, it's the honest, it's honesty, honestly, really. Just being able to talk to you is always so lovely. And like you say in your induction, you know, if you see me around, come talk to me. And I don't think many leaders use that approach. It's a lovely, lovely approach to use.
I think there's I did as well. You know, when you see the chief executive, well, they must be dead important.
Oh,
they
must
know everything. And, you know, it can be quite intimidating. Actually, there's a human being behind that role, and that human being wants to connect with people and make sure that, you know, when I need treatment or my family needs treatment, actually, we're all in the same boat. And the role is one thing, but there's a person behind that role, and that person's an entirely normal human being who just likes to know what our services are and connect with our staff and our patients.
Yeah.
I actually, last night, I went out with our district nurses.
Oh, did you? Where did you get up to?
Oh, yeah. Oh, so we did a number of home visits I went out with Katie, who is just phenomenal. And there's the bit around, you know, obviously her job, and we drive between different patients and we see them in their own homes, which is an absolute privilege seeing somebody in their own home. But hearing about Katie and her story reminded me that we've all got a story. We've all got something that connects us to somebody else, and it goes back to the bit around being human and being normal and the role being something, but actually we only ever see the person who's standing in front of us. We don't see and hear unless we have that absolute understanding of who they are, what's led them into that position, and how they've got into that role, and what drives them. We just make so many assumptions about people rather than and so everybody's got a story, and I think people are just fascinating. Everybody's got a story.
Yeah, and I've learned so much more about you today on this podcast so far. A union. You worked in a union. Amazing.
Yeah. I have an argument in an empty room with myself. I am quite argumentative, but I think that's been brought up around the table where we had dinner together, and you know, my parents were I was quite an argumentative child, I like to challenge people, and I like people to challenge me back because I can come up with lots of ideas, but actually they can only be formed fully if we've debated them and considered them and make sure that we understand the full consequences of those ideas and those actions. So I do genuinely like to debate with people to form better ideas.
Yeah, I don't think it's argumentative. I think it's just passion, Fiona.
Curiosity. Oh, nosiness. Yeah. I'm just a really curious person.
We love
really
it.
Really curious.
We love it. And I think one of the things I really liked, actually, I thought it was quite refreshing to see from a chief exec was when you were talking about, actually, I think in one of the board meetings I'd come along to talk about the EDI plan at the time that was being developed. Yeah. And you said to me, Amriz, I want to know how I can use my privilege for good.
Yeah.
And you just called it out. I thought, that's fantastic. Somebody at that level that really gets it, really understands it, for example. And I was just really keen to see what sort of things, you know, you do, or maybe on a daily, weekly, lifelong basis to help you use your privilege for good.
So I think that's a really tough question. And I think...
I'm challenging you now, Fiona.
No, I am glad you are, because we all consider... So going into people's homes last night was a real privilege. And we do use privilege in a number of different ways. But... we often see privilege around how do we do things, and we're almost patriarchal or matriarchal society. Actually, I see privilege as amplifying people's views. So having great mentors, reverse mentoring. So you mentioned Benash earlier, who was our cultural liaison midwife. She absolutely challenged my ideas and views, and actually, what can I do to support people? And the other person who in work really challenges my views is one of our radiologists, Rizwan Malik. And I've spent a lot of time talking to Rizwan about what can I do to support equality, diversity and inclusion. And one of those is and I hope he, I'm sure he won't mind me saying this because he's tweeted about it quite recently, but he, you know, why is it always, as he says, the brown man in the room that asks the questions about EDI or BAME leadership? Actually, that's not his job. That's my job. My job is to ask those questions. My job is to challenge those thought processes. And actually, Rizwan's job is to come in with lots of other different ideas, because he's got plenty of other different ideas and different challenges that he could come along with. But we do make some conscious decisions to let some of our BAME colleagues talk in the BAME language. And actually, that's, I want to talk that language. And I will, I have said to many of my colleagues, I am clumsy. I can be clumsy with my language, but I'd rather be clumsy with my language, but mean it and talk about things in a way that is understandable, than not talk about some of those difficult or not have those difficult conversations. And I think in my past, I felt embarrassed about not knowing and understanding and seeing things through a different viewpoint. So would not talk about it. And actually, that's doing more harm than good, because actually just throwing that conversation into a room and talking about people of colour, talking about your own privilege, talking about also your lack of privilege as a woman sometimes, is how we really concentrate people's minds and actually challenge people's viewpoints. So I would rather surround myself with people who challenge me and really make me think differently than people who are like me. So you will know, if you walk into the main entrance at Bolton Royal, you walk past the sea of white faces on the corridor that are the executive team. That's just about to change. I can't tell you more yet, but that is just about to change.
Yes, spoiler alert. Indeed.
I know. But when I look around my organisation has 18% of our population from a BAME background. And so I see that huge, huge multicultural society within my own organisation. And it's how do we use our privilege to really promote people? So having a great BAME leadership programme through Ilias Adams and the BAME Forum is just, I think, is magical. So the more we can promote, the more we talk about our colleagues, whether they be from whatever ethnic background they're from, or their ethnicity, or from a transgender, whether they be from an LGBTQ background, you know, what do we do to make sure that we just talk about it, so that we have those conversations, than rather be frightened to have those conversations. I think if we're frightened to have those conversations, we're challenging ourselves and we should be talking about them. And there's so much more we can do. So we're on a journey to do that, but we're not there yet. And I think the more we have difference of opinion, different thought process, the better. And I know we talk about the colour of people's skin, but actually sometimes that gets in the way of other privileges as well. I don't mean gets in the way, but we don't talk about within certain communities, we don't talk about caste, because we don't understand about caste. And I think the caste system fascinates me hugely, having seen how people have worked together within that caste system. So there is privilege within privilege within privilege that we can only just scrape the surface of. And I think the more we're inquisitive and curious of other people's worlds, the more that we can draw out those differences and also draw out those similarities of who we are and how we can work better together.
Yeah, I love everything you said there, Fiona. I was, I know you can't see me, but I was nodding along as you were talking. I'm nodding along
I've seen, so one of the most dreadful things I ever saw, and I didn't understand, and I didn't, and what I would say to myself if I was in that role again was ask the question why, is I saw somebody, a clinician who was from a lot lower caste, dealing with a radiographer from a much higher caste, And because he was a doctor and she was a radiographer, from a hierarchy point of view, he trumped her as a in a profession, so he thought. But from a caste system, she trumped him, and he would do everything he could to undermine her. And I saw that in action so many times, and I never called it out. And because I didn't understand it, I didn't understand the dynamics it was causing. And I, with hindsight now, I would ask the question and just be curious about why that dynamic was playing out, to try and understand why people were behaving in that way.
Absolutely. Like I say, you've got to be curious and ask those questions and challenge where you can, where appropriate. And like you say, recognizing, understanding privilege, which I think is so important too. And Bolton is such a diversely wonderful place. I mean, although I don't work for the Trust anymore, I am an adopted Boltonian
family. Are you living in Bolton?
I am.
It gets under your skin, doesn't it?
It does. I was like, I'm not moving to Ashton. I'm staying in Bolton. This is my little home. It's so nice and warm and everyone's so friendly. And, you know, like I said, 18% from a Black Asian minority ethnic background. So it feels like home, even though it's not home. And my chair of Pennine, where I work currently, says, if you can see us, you can be us.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love that saying. And, you know, talking about just feeling visible and represented. And it's such, like I said, a warm community. And I know every NHS organisation is on a journey with equality, diversity and inclusion. I don't think anyone has really cracked it yet. We're all trying to be better and improve. What sort of things are you doing at Bolton for equality, diversity, inclusion?
Okay, so I want to create an environment which is sustainable and creates a reflection of the community that we serve. So the so we've just completed the first phase of our BAME leadership program. So we have got a number of new leaders that have been promoted because of that program, and it's that we've seen them, we've nurtured them, and we've promoted them into new roles, ward managers and so on, which has been brilliant to see. And some of it is giving and supporting people that they have to have the confidence in their abilities. And I've seen such great people come out of that previous leadership program that it's something that we need to continue with. And I think part of that leadership program allowed us the privilege, and is privilege, of having reverse mentoring from individuals across that forum with some of our senior leaders across the organization. And that's really opened our eyes into what it's like to work in our organization and to be from a non-white background. And that's, some of it's really hard to hear and see, some of it's just wonderful to see and hear.
Yeah.
That's just one of the very small things that we've been doing, but there's so much more we can do through our OD team, as you were part of, to continue that leadership journey. And it's, how do we, you know, consciously promote people from a BAME background? How do we consciously make a significant impact into the organisation around making sure that we've got that real diversity of thought as well as background that really and truly reflects the organisation and the communities that we do serve? And as you know, 20% of our communities are from a BAME background, and 18% of our staff are. So we're not far off reflecting our communities, but there's still a 2% gap, which is still significant. It's still a couple of hundred people across a 6,000 workforce. To make sure that we can reflect our communities. So it's something that is very much on our focus, and making sure that our staff engagement and our, because I think, you know, the reflections of our staff engagement and the reflections of our RES and DES data, because we've got a number of people who have disabilities in the organisation, and some of them have come forwards and have talked about having that disability. And I can't tell you how proud I am of, you know, one of our exec team who's come forward, and she made me, you know, she's made me cry. I'm just so proud of her telling her story, because actually nobody would know that she has a disability. But it's a you know, it makes her and yeah. It makes her the purely beautiful person that she is as well.
Absolutely. Well, Fiona, I could talk to you all day long, but I know our time's coming to an end. I just want to say thank you so much for coming along, for thank being you. Brave and courageous and sharing your views. Fiona Noden, everybody.
Oh, thank you, Amrez. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Equality Lens. Please remember to hit like, subscribe, and leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay safe and look after one another. The Equality Lens. Listen, learn, be better. Be better.